The old ones taught that the people once lived in a red world, long before coming to the desert where they now dwell. Coyote, ever the trickster, caused a huge flood that would have killed all the people if they had not been able to reach the blue world safely. In transit. No matter how hard he tried, Jamie found the living quarters on the Mars-bound spacecraft small, cramped, and stifling. He knew his compartment was actually a bit larger than the quarters he had occupied in the first expedition's craft, but that space vehicle had been equipped with a wardroom spacious enough to accommodate all 12 of the scientists and astronauts aboard. And there had been an observation center as well, a place where Jamie could get away from everyone else, at least for a little while. The second expedition's craft was laid out in a circular plan. Each of the 8 compartments was a pie-shaped cubicle, each precisely the same size as all the others. A passageway ran along the outer perimeter, giving access to each cubicle. It also served as Trudy Hall's running track. Every morning, for the entire 5 months of the flight to Mars, Jamie was awakened by her remorseless thumping round and round for at least a full hour. In each compartment, the door at the wide end of the pie wedge opened onto the passageway. The door at the narrow end opened onto one of the ship's 2 lavatories. The 3 women shared one lav, the 5 men shared the other. There were no observation ports. The ship's designers had placed a flat display screen on one wall of each living compartment, an electronic window that could show outside views or videos at the whim of the occupant. It could also be used as a computer display. Their cylindrical spacecraft swung at the end of a 5-kilometer-long tether composed of microscopic-sized tubules of buckyballs, man-made molecules of carbon atoms shaped like geodesic spheres. Tough, light, and pliable, the buckyball tethers had a greater tensile strength than the strongest metal alloys. On the other end of the tether was the nuclear rocket system and its radiation shield. The 2 modules swung around their common center to give a feeling of gravity to the explorers, a full terrestrial G when they left Earth orbit, slowly winding down to the 1/3 G of Mars as they crossed the gulf between the planets. Thus, the explorers would be adapted to Martian gravity when they landed. Despite the electronic window, Jamie felt like a penned animal, a convict in jail. The spacecraft was never quiet. Pumps chugged, air fans buzzed, computers beeped. He could hear people talking from 3 or 4 compartments away. Every day, Trudy Hall's endless jogging around the outer passageway sounded like a Chinese water torture, padding incessantly at her precise trotting pace. Jamie spent as little time in his quarters as possible, preferring the galley on the level above. At least it was large enough to hold all 8 of them at once, although it was something of a squeeze. They were always bumping shoulders up there, literally. Good morning was inevitably followed by, oops, sorry. The galley doubled as a conference room. There was no other room available. Their spacecraft had been designed to minimize cost, not maximize crew comforts. Despite the crowding, or perhaps because of it, everyone was extremely polite, most of the time. No one complained about body odors or stale jokes. No one played discs or videos without using an earplug, unless everyone agreed to listen or watch. If any of them paired off for sex, they kept quiet about it, both during the lovemaking and afterward, most of the time. But there were tensions. Possum Craig took some teasing about his nose, but to Jamie's eye, he was sensitive about his status as the team's repairman. He's a professional scientist, Jamie knew, but he spent his career working for petroleum companies rather than universities. The other scientists unconsciously looked down at him. Vijay Shekhar seemed constantly on guard against sexual advances. She had seemed like an attractive young woman when Jamie had first met her, but after the months of being confined in the spacecraft, she began to look to him like one of the voluptuous dancing girls carved on the face of a Hindu temple, and the other men obviously felt the same way. But with her Aussie caustic wit, she shriveled any man who tried to come on to her. It took several weeks before Tomas Rodriguez finally admitted defeat to himself. Fuchida was more difficult for Jamie to fathom. He was exquisitely polite at all times and seemed totally at ease in the crowded living spaces. Yet his eyes seemed sad, melancholy, as if he longed for an Eden that was forever lost. Jamie wondered what preoccupied the Japanese biologist. Was it something in his past that was bothering him, or something in the future he was worried about? The other biologist, Trudy Hall, seemed to be quite self-contained. Pleasant almost all the time, intelligent, but certainly not outgoing. She went her own way and spent most of her time working with Fuchida. Anastasia Dezhurova was just the opposite. Stacy looked gloomy, scowling, forbidding, but once he began talking with her, she opened up into a friendly, likable, utterly competent woman. She was big-boned, thick in the middle, slow in movement, but her reflexes were lightning fast. During a mandatory training session out in the Badlands of Dakota, Jamie had seen her snatch a field mouse in her bare hand when it came sniffing into her tent. Then she tenderly carried the terrified rodent out to the brush and set it free. Dezhurova was the senior of the team's two astronauts, with more than a dozen flights into space for the Russians. She was second in command to Jamie. She worked with Rodriguez, and as the weeks went by, more and more with Craig on maintaining the equipment and running the astronomical experiments at the behest of the astronomers back on Earth. If being subordinate to her threatened Rodriguez's machismo, he gave no outward sign of it. Tomas seemed to be an amiable, easygoing sort, although Jamie wondered how long he could remain cooped up with the three women without causing a problem. It was Dex Trumbull who gave Jamie the most irritation. Dex, with his cocky, handsome smile and smooth manners. A young man born to money who'd never had to struggle for anything in his life. His father had been a major force in funding this expedition, yet Dex would have been chosen to go anyway. He was that good a geophysicist. Degrees from Yale and a doctorate from Berkeley, no less, plus brilliant work on the lunar mascons. The long months of the journey to Mars went smoothly enough, except for a communications breakdown when the main comm antenna responded to a faulty computer command and pointed itself away from Earth. For a whole day, Dezhurova and Rodriguez tried every programming trick they knew to unlock the antenna to no avail. At last, the Russian and Craig had to suit up and go EVA to physically remove the antenna's steering system and reprogram it inside the spacecraft, then go out and reinstall it. No damage done, and no one got hurt, although everyone was jittery until they re-established contact with Mission Control on Tarawa. Jamie noticed, though, that Trudy Hall was ashen-faced with tension. When he asked Vijay about her, Schechter told him she had given the biologist tranquilizers to calm her down. The only other incident came when a solar flare erupted and they had to spend 53 hours in the spacecraft's shielded storm cellar. Hall hyperventilated from anxiety, but otherwise everyone was all right. Trudy took a good deal of teasing about having to clap a wretch bag over her face and breathe into it for almost 20 minutes. Then, late one night, when they were halfway to Mars, as he prepared for bed, Jamie heard muffled laughter from the next compartment, Dex's quarters. "What's he ever done?" Through the thin partition between their compartments, Trumbull's voice sounded accusing, almost angry. "I mean, what's he ever contributed to the field of geology?" The answering voice was too low, too muffled for Jamie to make out either the words or the speaker. It sounded like a woman's voice, he thought. "I'll tell you what scientific contributions our big engine chief has made," Trumbull went on, loud and clear. "Nothing. Zip. Nada. Zero." "He's talking about me," Jamie realized. The woman said something. The tone sounded as if it might have been a protest. "Oh, yeah, sure. He drove the first expedition to go to the Grand Canyon, and they found the lichen there. But he didn't make the discovery, the biologists did. He might have married one of them, but he couldn't even make that work." The woman spoke again, lower still. "If he weren't a redskin, he wouldn't be the mission director, I can tell you that," Trumbull insisted. "His scientific accomplishments have been zero. He's a political choice, nothing more." Trumbull went on for a while in a lower tone, his words too muffled now for Jamie to make out. Jamie sank down on his bunk, feeling empty inside, drained, defeated. "He's right," Jamie realized. I haven't contributed much to the field. I got on